All right, good morning. So we're going to continue on in terms of, we went through a cell injury last week. We went through acute and chronic inflammation. We finished that up yesterday. Now we're going to talk about the last process when you have an inflammatory process that's germane, and that is, how does a body repair itself? And this becomes very important. Living creatures throughout the plant and animal kingdom have had to deal with injury. Like this giant sequoia, which is one of the oldest living creatures on this planet, over 2,000 years old. It has had to deal with lightning, humans, fires, bugs, parasites, but it had to survive. And it had to deal with injury and repair itself. And so it becomes important that all living creatures have to have a reparative process in order to survive. Otherwise, we would not exist. And so it's important to look at evolutionarily what has tissue repair been like in various plants, like this example, or in other creatures. And that's why this lecture is on tissue repair, regeneration. We have a whole field of regenerative medicine now, trying to harness those stem cells, which are self-renewing, and total potential that can now differentiate the various cell types. We're also going to talk about fibrosis or scarring, because that is the other issue that we have to deal with as mammalians, especially as humans, because our ability to regenerate is quite different compared to other animals. So if you take this animal, a hydra, it's a multicellular invertebrate. When I was a high school student, I did a research project asking a very basic question. What amino acids would promote regeneration? And what I discovered was arginine and lysine, amino basic acids, are the ones. So you don't see anybody selling that out, but that's what you need. But this regeneration, where you take this hydra, cut it in half, cut it into five different pieces, you'll get five hydra. If you take this invertebrate that I worked with as a high school student, if I split this planarian, which is another invertebrate, right down the middle, I get two planaria. I cut a human being in half, I got a mess. So it's quite different when you think of how organisms have to deal with tissue repair. Because now when you get into vertebrates, like a lizard, a reptile, you can regenerate that tail. But will it go back to exactly the way it looked like originally? No. And so as you go through the animal kingdom, their capacity to regenerate is being lost. And this becomes very important. And people are trying to reverse this in regenerative medicine to deal with tissue repair. So the reparative process, when we talk about regeneration, we want to reestablish the structure and function that the original tissue through embryogenesis and development had given us. That's the ultimate goal. But the problem is, this regenerative capacity in you and I has been lost. And it depends on how old you are and what tissues you are, in terms of when you're a fetus, embryo, versus when you're a newborn, versus when you're a five-year-old, versus your age, my age, or somebody who's 100 years old. Their regenerative capacity changes as you march through time. And this is very important. And you'll notice, for example, if I take an incision and make it on my face here, I'll get a scar. But if I go inside and make an incision in my buccal mucosa, I won't get a scar. So even within the different environments that are close by, there is different regenerative capacities depending upon the function and structures that are being affected. So what we do, instead of regenerating, we replace tissue with what? Scarring. But when you know, once we have scar, the more a tissue has scar in it, what happens to its function? Decreases. Think of every organ in your body as a bank account. You start out with 100% funds, but as you use them or lost the ability to regenerate and replace that fund with scar tissue, the amount of funds gets depleted until you now become clinically a problem in terms of signs or symptoms of the disease process. So everybody worries about what you look like on the outside. You should be more concerned about what you look like on the inside. because you'll see people walking around that have very little reserve in their organs, and they could have problems at any moment depending upon the stress or demand that's placed on those organ systems. As we get to the systemic pathology, it could be your heart, your lungs, your brain, your skin, all these different organ systems, bone. So it becomes very important to realize that this is an issue. So the capacities of mammalians that we belong to have limited capacity to regenerate, but we have a lot of capacity, what? Scarring. For example, this is my mother's, my wife's aunt, when she was a little 11-year-old girl. She was working in her family's market or store, and she was working with a meat grinder, and she put her hand too deep into the grinder. And this is what the result that she had, and obviously she was able to adapt the rest of her life. And you can see the regenerative capacity is not there compared to other type of, like amphibians. They can regenerate their digits, but we cannot. So when we have injury, we've talked about this. It could be due to a cut, a burn. It could be due to an infarct, a localized collection of coagulative necrosis, immune reaction, immunocomplexes, antibodies, infection, chemical agents, drugs, mechanical forces, tumor invasion, or genetic defects will lead to some type of wounding in tissue. And so the tissue's got to respond in a way to try to reestablish structure and function, but be based on the ontogeny of the individual, where they are, and their number of stem cells, and the capacity of those cells to differentiate become important in how you're going to address this in different patients. So classic type of wounds. We have an acute wound like acute inflammation. Acute wound will go through an orderly process that we'll go through in this lecture, and you've been experts. You've all had wounds somewhere on your skin during your life, and you just have to watch it play out. And it'll try to restore and go back to its original state, and that's what you want. Just like acute inflammation, you want it to be brief. You want to intercede, shepherd the process, and then get complete resolution. That's what your job is as clinicians, to get to that point. Obviously, there's another type of wound we call chronic wound, where the sequence has been interrupted or prolonged. If it becomes interrupted, it's a failure. If it's prolonged, we're going to go now from acute to chronic. And what's the likelihood of scarring now occurring? Goes higher. And then the ability to reestablish the organ that's been injured has severely been affected. So it becomes very important to realize every organ that you own has a bank account associated with it and has a reserve. You'll deplete it. That's why people take risks as a teenagers and in your age group, 20s and 30s. But when you get my age, we don't take risks because our capacity, we know, is a lot less. And so to establish that. Okay? So you think of a diabetic, you're going to have diabetic patients. They're poor wound healers, and they have chronic non-healing ulcers. And we'll talk about the factors. And that's why they would be a chronic wound. And now you've broken down a barrier of the skin. They're prone to infections, and they're going to have more scarring and fibrosis. And so it becomes a real problem. So when we talk about different regenerative capacities, we have to talk about stem cells. And there are three categories of cells in our tissues. We have 205 different cells in the human body. And depending upon the tissues, they have different amounts of stem cells, those that are differentiated cells that can still divide, and those that are permanent cells that cannot divide. And so when you have a disease process in the various organs where it becomes important to know the histology, then you understand why you're seeing it clinically, the end result. And that's why regenerative medicine is trying to reverse this by looking at how can we harness stem cells and minimize the residual effect of scarring, but maximizing the regenerative capacity, reestablish structure and function. So when we talk about labile tissues, we're talking about those tissues in the human body that have a lot of stem cells. What are examples of this? Is your bone marrow. You're making red blood cells, white blood cells continuously. So therefore, you have a large amount of stem cells in your bone marrow. Other stem cells are in your skin. You're constantly washing off squamous cells, rubbing it. They're coming off with your clothing, because if you could look at your clothing after you wear it during the day, you'd be just covered with squamous cells all over the place. Okay. And so you have to have stem cells in the basal layer. You have your hair constantly growing. So you have stem cells in your hair follicles, for example. You think of the oral cavity. I'm articulating to you. If I eat, I'm constantly losing squamous cells. So I'm constantly regenerating our oral cavity, our esophagus, our GI tract, respiratory tract, our urinary tract, because epithelial cells living on a basement membrane are constantly being exposed to the environment, stressed, being lost, and so you have to have stem cells. Another important area you have stem cells are your gonads. Like in males, for example, in your age, the reproductive age, you're making roughly about 90 to 95 million sperm per testicle per day. So if you're making that many sperm per day, you have to have a lot of what? Stem cells. So this constant renewing is very important. But there's a problem when you have stem cells, because we know from biochemistry or medical genetics that basically DNA fidelity is not 100%, because the most common problem with the testes in your age group as males, 15 to 35, is testicular cancer. Because of all those stem cells, they can now acquire mutations and propagate those mutations and then lead to neoplasia. What do you think is the most common cancer in the age of 6 and under? Just based on what I've given you as an example. And it's leukemia. Because what are you having a lot of in your bone marrow when you're less than 6? Stem cells. And those stem cells acquire mutations that can now predispose to leukemia, which is malignancy or liquid cancer, some people call it, arising in the bone marrow. So you can look at a person and you can predict from epidemiologic evidence what sort of conditions you'll get as a consequence of this. Another type of cell population are stable cells. You have a mixture of both stem cells and differentiated cells that are able to still divide. What are classic organs like this is your liver. If I take half your liver and you donate it to somebody, your body will tell that liver, or the liver itself, will then grow to a capacity to meet your metabolic needs and stop growing. So you can regenerate or make increase. You gave your left lobe to somebody, your right lobe would get bigger and fill that biochemical needs of the body. So what are other cells? Fibroblasts in your connective tissue compartment. You think of endothelial cells. You have new blood vessel formation. We'll talk about this in tissue repair. Angiogenesis becomes important. And so these are examples. Cartilage, chondrocytes, osteoblasts, osteocytes, they can still divide. So these are cells that have capacity to regenerate. And thank goodness, when you get a fracture, what cells do you need more of? You need more osteoblasts that become osteocytes. So it depends. But what happens to the number of stem cells as you get older? It decreases. So who's going to take longer to heal a fracture? 95-year-old person or a 5-year-old? 95, because they have less stem cells. And it becomes a problem. And so this becomes an issue. So if you're going to fracture, when's the best time to fracture your bones? You're younger, yes. Then you have to worry about osteoporosis. And you got thin bones or decreased bone density, and you fracture that, we've got some real problems. So it becomes important to realize we're changing constantly. As you move from 1 year to the next, you don't feel like you're different. But at the cellular level, you are. You're all unique. Then we come to the permanent cells that have very little stem cell capacity. They have less ability to differentiate. We think of neurons. We also think of cardiac myocytes, not able to divide. These are permanent cells. Once you go through the second phase of meiosis, of ovocytes in the ovary, that's it. So you have to think of various tissues in the body, and you look at these various groups of labile cells, you think of stable cells, and you think of permanent cells. So when I have a heart attack, which is essentially the myocardium dying, the only thing I can replace it is what? If the myocytes can't be regenerated, what's the only choice you have left? Scar tissue. That is the theme of this lecture, is scarring. Because that tissue cannot regenerate, you're left with what? Scarring. And now what happens to the contractility of that myocardium? Increased or decreased? Decreased. It's like the reserve. The more you lose of that structure replaced with scar tissue, its function is now severely impaired. So here is, we think of the cell cycle, and here is just looking at various points. We think of cell stem cells, you think of what? The epidermis, the epithelium throughout your body is constantly have stem cells regenerating because they're constantly being replaced, turned over, used, stressed, whatever. And then you have the permanent cells down here, the cardiac, neurons. They are in growth arrest and they can't enter the cell cycle very well. And then you have those that are quiescent but can re-enter the cell cycle when called upon. And so these become very important focal points of how you can manipulate cells to regenerate. If you could take the permanent cells and allow them to become re-enter and then re-establish. But that becomes an issue too, because remember, you're formed as a conception, as a fetus, and an embryo. So it's unique organization that takes place in the beginning. You have to try to recapitulate that. It's not just simply injecting stem cells and you reconstitute an organ. It's not the same as you think of going through embryogenesis that had a very unique sequence and timetable to be completed versus just injecting stem cells. So if you look at the stem cell research and what clinical trials have been done, you can see that they're not have been at times very successful, and there are issues with this. So this is an example of the kidney. The kidney has the tubular epithelium of the nephron are stable cells. And this is an example to show that when there's a lack of blood flow to your kidney, the epithelial cells, since they're highly metabolic and have a lot of mitochondria, they're prone to ischemic damage. If you look carefully right here, you notice you see a mitotic figure. And it's telling me that these are stable cells, and you can reconstitute renal function because these tubular epithelial cells are stable cells, and you can go from acute renal failure to a normal renal function because of the capacity to regenerate. And so it becomes important to, as you go through and look at the various organ systems, why certain organs are able to reconstitute themselves based on their regenerative capacity. But if you infarcted that area of the kidney where it becomes totally dead, you're not going to be able to regenerate, and you replace it with scar. So it depends on the context and the type of injury, and the extent of injury will have a dramatic effect on the tissues. Okay? So let's talk about components. We're going to tell a story about tissue repair. So let's take the skin. These processes are going to be overlapping, like any biological process. It's not like a biochemical step where you go A, B, C, and D, but there's going to be overlapping. So we're going to use the skin because it's the largest organ in the body and we can see it. And we'll use that as our prototypic example of tissue repair. Let's say we cause an injury to our skin, the first thing that happens, since it's the largest organ in the body, it'll bleed. So you're now going to have platelets and fibrin pouring out and red blood cells. Everybody's had a paper cut or laceration, right, in this room. And so what you're going to form is a scab. But what's the clinical term for a scab? An eschar. Another vocabulary, it's great for Scrabble, is eschar, E-S-C-H-A-R. And we'll talk about what eschars look like. And how many people have picked an eschar? And what did your parents tell you to not do when they saw you doing that? And you asked why, because you were a bright individual, because you want to know why. What would they tell you? Scar. But there's actually seven reasons why you don't want to pick, but they didn't go into the other six. But there's actually seven reasons, roughly, why you don't want to pick a scab. And you'll see why. You don't want to pick a scab, but you can pick it at a very unique time. We'll see clinically how you can pick a scab, but you got to know when to pick it to optimize the results. Okay? So once you have tissue injury, what's the first inflammatory cell to arrive? Neutrophils, followed by macrophages. That sequence we went over. Then we're going to send out growth factors from various cells in that tissue that's been injured. And now we're going to do what? Regeneration, to reestablish that epithelium or that dermis in response to it. Now we're going to have to, that regenerative capacity is limited, so now we have to turn to what? Scar formation, fibrosis. What's the cell or that orchestrates tissue repair is your macrophages. Since they live 620 days, they're like a contractor. They're going to be in there to complete the work. No delays. They're not going to subcontract out. And so they're going to go in there and they're going to stimulate the fibroblasts to lay down the first type of collagen called collagen type 3. It has plasticity to it. Because you want to remodel the tissue and you don't want to put it reinforced right away, because if there's mechanical motion, like the skin is a mechanical organ. And so it's important to lay down the collagen in a certain way that it doesn't cause contractures, permanent loss of function of the skin or its ability of compliance. So you're going to increase blood flow because you need more oxygen and nutrients. So you're going to have angiogenesis and increase extracellular matrix, including fibroblasts are proliferating and laying down collagen type 3. Then to make it a stronger collagen, we're going to remodel it. We're going to convert it to a stronger collagen, which is the most ubiquitous collagen in the human body, is collagen type 1. It has greater tensile strength and it represents 90% of the human body's collagen. And it's found in your skin, tendons, ligaments, bone. And that's where you need a lot of structural support, and that becomes a very important collagen. And that's where we end up with scarring. So let's take a wound, because you got to look at wounds. You can talk about this, and it's like having cereal without milk or berries on it. You got to opsonize it. So we're going to show you clinical case of the skin. Here you have a patient who have a severe thermal injury to the dorsum of the left hand. And you can see that the epidermis is peeled off and you see it's bleeding. So when you have this hemorrhage, because we don't want to lose intravascular volume, we have to cause vasoreactive compounds. You get vasodilation, and then you're going to go through hemostasis, producing a hemostatic plug so you don't lose the blood. And this platelets and coagulation factors that are going to be activated in this process are going to form a provisional or temporary bandage. We call this a scab or eschar. Now, everyone in this room has had a scab somewhere. This blood clot is going to be basically a temporary scaffolding of extracellular matrix molecules, in this case, taking fibrinogen and converting the fibrin in a polymerization reaction. Scabs come in different sizes. And here you see a gentleman who's had a severe thermal injury, third-degree burn to his upper torso on the left side. That's a pretty big scab, I would say. But we are going to take this patient, I'll show you later once we complete the sequence of events, how we're going to pick this scab and promote regeneration. Because you can imagine if you had a scab full of blood, fibrin, and cellular debris, it would take a long time for those macrophages to break it down, wouldn't it? So what would grow in that scab that you'd be concerned about clinically is bacteria and fungi. Viruses cannot grow in there because they need living cells. This is dead tissue. Parasites are not going to live in there. It could be in a different part of the world, but you could have larvae, flies flying on it and put larvae, and they could debride the wound. But that could happen too. And I've seen that with patients coming in the emergency room and they have chronic ulcerations and you find larvae eating, debriding it, and it saved their life because they don't eat living tissue, they only eat dead tissue, and it's a great way for debridement. No, it's not painful. Painful to look at, but not as you're the person, okay? So when we have inflammatory phase, we have injury, we have the acute inflammatory response, we're going to go on to repair. The neutrophils and macrophages and lymphocytes are coming in. The macrophages are there. If we need more, we'll bring it with the monocytes. Then we're going to release growth factors from the macrophage, as well as other cells release growth factors, platelets, fibroblasts, epithelial cells. And we're going to form what is called granulation tissue, and this is something you'll see clinically, especially if it involves the skin, which will be red. And I'll show you examples where you have angiogenesis. And the angiogenesis is going to be promoted by the release of vascular endothelial growth factor manufactured by the macrophages. And we call this angiogenesis. So the macrophage is a shepherd of tissue repair. And that, because of this, becomes important. And that's why we have macrophages throughout the body and are going to be important when you have cell injury. No matter what the disease process, they will be able to shepherd this process. And then you will work in concert with them, especially as physical therapists, to control them and to direct them in the right way. So here's a scab. Yeah. Oh, just scratch your head. So here's a scab. Now, why do you get fibrosis if you pick a scab? Because that's what all parents tell their children when they see somebody picking a scab. Why would you get fibrosis? Based on what you know now at this point. What's that? You keep your, so when you pick a scab, what's the first thing that happens when you pick a scab? So what are you starting back at? Ground zero. And if you repeat it multiple times, what's the likelihood of activating macrophages and then the activating fibroblasts to lay down collagen? Guaranteed or your money back. So you lead to scarring. But your parents, you ask, why do you get scarring? They would never tell you, right? They say you just get scarring. Okay? Now, when you look at this scab, what cell do you notice living in that scab? It's in this diagram. Macrophage. So if you pick that scab, you're getting rid of the contractor. And you got to get more macrophages come in and help you with tissue repair. And also a third reason is a scab is a dumpster. And what do you put in dumpster when you're remodeling tissue? Is garbage, cellular garbage. So now you don't have a dumpster. Now you got to start all over again and recreate that dumpster. Now, if you don't pick a scab, what happens to the scab? If you don't pick at it, why does it fall off? What process that we just talked about is occurring underneath the scab that you see occurring right here? If you look at the scab closely, what is occurring with these epithelial cells? They're regenerating. So once those squamous cells actually crawl, you don't feel this, but they actually crawl underneath the scab, and they're multiplying, and then as soon as they reestablish the barrier, do you need that scab anymore? No, it falls off. But now if you pick the scab, what's the fourth process you interfere with? Regeneration. The very thing you want, you now are going to interfere with. Okay? So you can see this ecosystem of the dermis, where we have fibroblasts, macrophages, here you have all this transforming growth factor, the fibroblastic growth factor, angiogenesis, VEGF, that's being released by the macrophage, both in the dermis and in the scab. And so you see neutrophils coming in. So this is a very multicellular process. Yes? Now, why is it itching? What cell would be around those new blood vessels? Our mast cells. And what do they release? And doesn't that make you itch? So it's telling you that as the angiogenesis is being formed, what's forming, what's also cells around there is mast cells. And they're releasing what? Right. That's why it itches. Makes sense, doesn't it? It's a pretty sexy story when you think about it. It took millions of years to get to this point. It won't change on an exam, by the way, so don't create anything different. Even though the choices may look sexy, but they're not. Okay? So regeneration. We migrate, and then we divide, because these are labile cells, our epidermis. So here, you see what's happening to the scab. You're now promoting a bridge across there. You can see the epithelial cells right here. They're bridging across. So they want to come across and connect. Then the scab will come off. But what do you see below is new blood vessels. And if you took that scab off at this point, what would be the color of the tissue? Pink to red. Because of the angiogenesis, we call this granulation tissue. This is the remodeling phase where you're laying down collagen type 3. As a consequence. Then these other molecules, what are called metallomatrix molecules, MMP, are very specific molecules to go after and break down the extracellular matrix molecules that are being laid down initially, so you can go through the remodeling phase to go from collagen type 3 to collagen type 1. Okay? And this becomes important. So another reason you want to pick that scab, you're going to interfere with the ability to go to the remodeling phase. Because you'll be stuck constantly making collagen type 3. So there's another reason you don't want to pick a scab. So the extracellular matrix molecules are important. We're bowls of jelly when we walk around. Each organ system has, or organs, have various amount of extracellular matrix. And what's the most common molecule found in the human body? Water. We're a jello. 75% of it our molecules are water. What's the driest organ what's the desert organ system that has the least amount of water in it? What organ system? You have 15 to choose from. Now your skin is very moist. You lose about 700 mLs of water just from your skin. It better be hydrated. What's the driest organ system that has the least amount of water in it? Bone. It better be. Could you want water in the bone? You'd be like a jello walking around. You wouldn't have no structural support. You only have 10% of your bone has water in it. But you have your skin, it's a mechanical organ, it has to move. You need the bone for support and attachment to muscles that are producing forces on it. So you don't want it to be too flexible. So it becomes important to realize extracellular matrix molecules and the amount of water vary from tissue to tissue. What's an organ that's soft as jello because it doesn't have very little fibroblast and very little collagen is your CNS. Because if you take your human brain and were to play with it, you could drop it on this floor and it would splat all over the place. But if you take your liver and drop it, not a problem. Because it has extracellular matrix. So why does the brain don't have a lot of extracellular matrix? Because it has to do what? It has to form neuronal connections. And it would interfere with all the various neurons, inhibitory, stimulatory, so it becomes important. So we're basically gels in different organ systems. As we go through the different organ systems, we'll talk about what is the consistency and its effect on damage to it. Proteoglycans, these are proteins that have a lot of sugar molecules on it, and they can interact with the water. Then you have the structural proteins of elastin and collagen. Elastin is found in your nose. You notice you could sleep on your nose like this, but you don't have to worry about it. In the morning, it'll go back to its normal state. You'll never get a wrinkle in your ear because it'll go right back to its normal state. Your skin, if you pinch it and let it go, you'll notice it goes back to its normal state, as well as your lungs are made of elastin. So elastin is a very important molecule to retain structural integrity and flexibility. Then fibronectin and lamin, these are extracellular matrix. It's basically attached to other molecules like collagen, and cells interact. And we're basically like puppeteers, that when you cause a force or an action on a tissue, you're actually going to be pulling on cells because they're connected to these extracellular molecules like a puppeteer. So if you put a force here, it'll be propagated through that tissue and tug on it, and it can get a response to it. And so we call this gel matrix the ground substance, and we have diffusion of nutrients and metabolites, growth factors, and hormones. Let's go back to that scab. What that scab is a temporary barrier. If you pick that scab, what happens is it's now exposed to the environment. You lose the water or water content in that tissue that's trying to repair, and now it desiccates that tissue, and then these hormones, the water, and all this cellular activity is impaired. So you cannot complete the tissue repair because you're desiccating the wound without having that scab, because you want to keep it moist in order for tissue repair to complete itself. So when we talk about angiogenesis, you can see here's the blood vessels, and this is just to show you that we're basically, our tissues at the cellular level are linked by these various molecules. And you can see collagen type 4 in the basement membrane, for example, and you see these proteoglycans with the sugars, and they're interacting, there's water in between this. And here you can see a fibroblast. As a physical therapist, when you think of the things you're doing, you're producing a mechanical force that's going to tell that fibroblast how to react to it and how to lay down collagen. Because you notice it's hooked by these various receptors on that fibroblast and other cells. And you can see as you put a mechanical force, they're attached to one another, and so it's going to be transmitted and you get a cellular response to it. Okay? So major collagens that you're responsible for, there's over 25 different or 29 different collagens in the human body. You only need the first four, but there are more. So the first one, is we've alluded to, is collagen type 1, and we found in the eventual tissue repair, scarring, 90%, bone, tendons, ligaments. Collagen type 2 is found in cartilage, plus collagen type 9. Then collagen type 3 is the first thing that we lay down in embryogenesis. That's why you think of a fetus and an embryo, they have flexibility because they have a lot of collagen type 3. And we turn out, our bones start out with collagen, basically cartilage, which is going to be collagen type 2. And then it gets converted to bone into collagen type 1 to give our structural integrity as we evolve. And so when we have tissue repair, we're laying down collagen type 3. Collagen type 4 is found in all basement membranes, where all epithelial cells or endothelial cells sit on. And so this becomes a very important molecule, is in all basement membranes. So here is not to be memorized, but you can see these are fibronectin and laminin. You see collagen type 4 is bound to it, cell binding domain, so you see how it interacts with cells that are attached to the basement membrane. And so when you transmit a mechanical force, for example, you're now going to have an effect on the cells biochemically and morphologically, and it's going to be important to realize that cells are attached to these molecules on the outside and to each other. Yes?
In the chart, you have that type 3 fibers are found in the smooth muscle of the uterus. In a postmenopausal woman, would those type 3s turn into type 1s since they're not actively contracting and shedding?
The question is, the uterus, they would, because it's smooth muscle cells and not a lot of fibroblasts, it'd still be collagen type 3. So in a postmenopausal female, what drives the smooth muscle cells is estrogen. Since you're making less estrogen, you're going to have a more atrophic smooth muscle cells and probably less collagen type 3 relative to the lack of stimulation of the smooth muscle cells with estrogen. Yes?
So on this laminin picture, I can see that it's connected to collagen. And
right.
And I see that it's bound to cell. What kinds of cells is it bound
fibroblasts,
to?
Fibroblasts. Because that's you think of. It could be to macrophages. It could be to chondrocytes. So depending upon the tissue and the extracellular matrix. So we're really basically puppeteers of cells when you think about it. We're not just free-floating cells. Makes sense, right? Now this is what it does to the cell. Here you see a cell and you have receptors, like those integrins we talked about that are important for cells to adhere to one another. And you can see there's collagen, fibronectin, and then if you pull on those molecules, it'll stimulate these complexes on the cytoplasmic side, and now you're going to tell the nucleus to proliferate, to differentiate, protein synthesis, migrate, change its shape, its morphology. So it becomes important. You can see why wounds, when it can be affected by mechanical forces on the cells. So now we come to the fibrous phase. We're going to increase collagen synthesis. We have all these growth factors and cytokines like IL-1 and IL-13. And a lot of these are made by macrophages or fibroblasts or other cells to stimulate the collagen type 3. That's what you think of granulation tissue, with also eventually being remodeled to collagen type 1 in this process. One of the things that's important that you, what happens to a wound, we'll see this clinically, is that the wounds get smaller because of wound contracture. The most powerful mechanical force in the human body is wound contracture. It goes by two reasons why you get the wound contraction. One, when you're making collagen type 1, you're cross-linking it, so it's bringing the wound closer together. The other reason is, that's mentioned on the slide, is you produce where the fibroblasts become contractility cells, because they have actin and myosin, so you have myofibroblasts, and that's what helps the edge of the wound contract as well. So there are two mechanisms of a wound contraction. One is going to involve the cross-linking of collagen type 3 to make it more tighter and a stronger tensile strength, as well as the myofibroblasts contracting the wound at the edge. And then in order to get this type of cells, this is highly metabolic, so you need new blood vessel formation or angiogenesis. And these are leaky blood vessels. And that also helps cleanse the wound or keep growth factors, nutrients coming into the wound. And that's why a bandage is important to protect the wound until you reestablish the barrier and get what you want. Yes?
Sorry, for the wound infection, did you say that the type 1 is
cross-linking? Yes, type 1.
Okay.
Type 1. That's what's going to cause it. As you remodel from type 3, you're going to make type 1. And through that process of type 1, you cross-link it and you get the wound. I'll show you how strong this is. Okay? So when we look at these processes, you're thinking over the period of time of a patient. You see an inflammatory process, you go through the granulation or the fibrosis phase, making what type of collagen? 3. And then you're going to remodel it to collagen type 1. Dream it, embrace that concept. And then where do you see wound contraction? When it's type 1. Okay? This is how angiogenesis takes place in two mechanisms. One, at the site of injury, you sprout out new blood vessels because of VEGF, vascular endothelial growth factor made by the macrophages. Then in your bone marrow, you have what are called endothelial cell precursor cells that are traveling, and when they're needed, they can now establish new tubes of blood vessels into the tissue. So there's two ways of making new blood vessels in your tissues. One, at the original site, you spread out new vessels, or you send out from the bone marrow these endothelial precursor cells that can now find that place and then create new blood vessels. When the blood vessel is formed, the new from the existing blood vessel circulation, you see the endothelial cells are creeping out there. They're loose. There's not much of a basement membrane yet. So that's why granulation tissue is very moist, and it's going to increase permeability and provide nutrients and oxygen and growth factors to the tissue. Here's what granulation tissue looks like microscopically. Here you see the blood vessels, and then you see a synthetically happy fibroblast making collagen type 3, and then you see inflammatory cells of neutrophils and macrophages in the background. Okay? Tissue remodeling phase, you're evolving into scar, collagen type 1. It's a balance of extracellular matrix synthesis of these molecules and degradation. There's a balance, and there are problems that arise clinically because of this. We have what are called these matrix metalloproteases, or MMPSs, and they break down the collagen, like collagen type 3, to be replaced by collagen type 1. And you have those other molecules. You don't have to memorize this, but you have other extracellular matrix molecules like proteoglycan, laminin, fibronectin. You need enzymes to deal with that as well, and that's what these are these, and they require what metal as a cofactor? Zinc. So does that mean you should go out and take zinc tablets to improve your tissue repair? No. You only need a little bit of zinc. You don't need a lot. If you have a proper diet, you get plenty of zinc. But people try to sell zinc tablets to you and say, I'm going to make tissue repair. No. You get more expensive urine. That's all. You're going to pee it out. All these vitamins or water that you take are water-soluble. You can use your pee for fertilizer. Truly recycling. If you have a balanced diet, unless you have a problem of metabolism that requires supplemental, that's when you need it. Like if you're pregnant, for example, that's when you need it, not just anything. So we have also tissue repair. We want this a balance. We have inhibitors as well. So when we look at this, here we see these things. Here's our fibroblasts laying down collagenase and then breaking down the extracellular matrix. And we have these TIMPs that will break it down, will modulate this or inhibit this process. And one of the things that people chronically get are given are what? Steroids, aren't they? Steroids can interfere with tissue repair. Because you can see how steroids can inhibit the production of transforming growth factor that's important to stimulate the deposition of collagen type 3, and then the remodeling phase. So various drugs can interfere with this process. So when we talk about fibrosis, we have this stimulation. What type of inflammation promotes fibrosis, acute or chronic? Chronic. So what cell gets activated? Macrophages. They are now going to release growth factors, stimulate fibroblasts, endothelial cells, granulation tissue, and more scarring. You have cytokines. You notice a lot of these cytokines are made by macrophages. and lymphocytes. Then you decrease the metalloproteases so you don't break it down as quickly, so you accumulate more and more scar tissue, and we have keloids or hypertrophic scars as a consequence to this. So let's look at this patient. This patient had that big scab. Now we've gone through this process. How do we deal with this patient so they can get back to the normal functioning? Is this patient going to have a big scar or a little scar relative to the initial wound? What do you think? You only got two choices, big or small, compared to the original wound. Small. You got to always remember that, because patients always worry about what they can see on the outside. They can care less about the scarring on the inside, unless it affects it. So what are you going to do with this patient? The first thing you're going to do is, I got to put a skin graft on this patient. So what do I take this patient? When you get a thermal injury like this, your capillaries are unstable for the first 24 to 48 hours. So this patient is going to lose a lot of intravascular volume, so we have to keep them hemodynamically stable. Once the capillaries heal in the skin, you're going to take them to the operating room where it's 98.6 degrees or 37 degrees Celsius. Because if I take off that skin, that scab, and I take it off, this patient can go into hypothermia, because one of the functions of the skin is thermal regulation. And so you're in an operating room at 37 degrees Celsius, which is that of the body temperature. And you're going to have blood products. So where are we going to get our stem cells? So we're going to go to the uninfected place of this patient, and we do what is called a split skin graft. You'll notice we're going to take the stem cells in the epidermis, but we're going to leave stem cells in the hair follicles, because we got to regenerate the donor site and the recipient site. We're going to take that skin, and it's going to be a rectangular, because it's like planing the skin. But we got to do one more thing to promote regeneration. Because we get this large open wound, we're going to have to put it through what is called a skin mesher. And the skin mesher, on the roller, you take this rectangular slice of skin that you've taken off, it's 0.07 inches in thickness, and you put it through that, it just pushes along, and it cuts it in a zigzag pattern. So then when you pull it, you've got gaps. And so now you can get a bigger bandage. And because what do squamous cells do? They crawl, don't they? So now if you have these small gaps, you can re-epithelialize that wound in 2 weeks. Versus if you took off the scab and just allowed it to come from the edges, it would take too long. You would get a big scab, reoccur infection. So this is what it looks like. After you remove the skin, that's what the skin grafts look like once you put them on. So obviously you're going to have to provide what? Good bandaging, because you don't want that wound to desiccate, because you want tissue repair to occur. Then 2 weeks later, what color does it look like? Pink, because what's forming underneath that? Granulation tissue. And so you've reestablished the epithelial barrier, and now who is he going to be sent to on a regular basis? Selfie time. You, because who's going to work with this patient? You. Selfie. Because what are you going to do? Because if you don't go through physical therapy with this patient, what's going to happen to that range of motion in that joint if he's like this all the time? It's going to contract, and he's not going to have the use of that left arm. So now, a year later after going to physical therapy, what do you notice about the size of the wound now compared to the original size? Because what's the most powerful mechanical force in the human body is? Wound contraction. Yes. Nope. There you go. Depends. This is a third degree burn, full thickness. So it depends upon where it's located and what the issues are. Because dead tissue takes a long time to be broken down. So you can imagine, what are we doing? We're one big macrophage. We just take it off at once with an 11-inch knife. Okay? So as we finish up tissue repair, couple more minutes. You got a few more minutes? Okay. Just a couple minutes. Okay. Well, just 2 minutes. I'll just show you these two things and we'll continue this on next week. So first thing is a scab. Is it good to pick a scab? No. So this is what is called primary intention, where you bring the edge of the wound together and you don't have to memorize the times, but we're going through all those five phases: regeneration, granulation tissue, and scarring. So here's a typical scar. Okay? And it's what color? White. And what type of collagen? One. Okay? Is it stronger or weaker compared to the normal skin around it? Weaker. Because it's not putting down the same original orientation as when it was formed during embryogenesis. So it only gets tensile strength of 70%. Now we have a secondary intention. What if you can't bring the edges of a wound together and you now have a big scab? So we're going to have this wound heal by secondary intention. But it takes longer. You're more prone to infection. Here's a patient, a migrant farm worker, didn't have access to medical care. He gets acute folliculitis, abscesses in his chin. And you can see it's swollen, it's red. So what is this patient going to go through? The patient is going through debridement. Somebody asked about that. So for the next hour, somebody's going to debride that wound, and now the wound looks like this. And they're shaven, obviously. And now, where do we stop debriding? Until it starts to bleed. And that means we've hit what? The blood vessels of angiogenesis that's been orchestrated by the macrophage. The patient asks, they ask you in the mirror, they say, okay, I want to look at this. And you go, oh my God. And they say, is this going to be a big wound or a little wound? What are you going to tell them? It's going to be smaller than what you originally see it as long as you follow my directions. So now you've got to give a bandage because this is the oral cavity. You want to probably drink through a straw because you don't want to be infected with food that's got bacteria on it. And they change the dressing two or three times a day. They come back to the clinic in 4 to 5 weeks. And now he's a very happy camper because now what do you notice about the size of the wound? Smaller because of the myofibroblasts, the cross-linking of collagen. And is it completed remodeling? No, because it's still what color? Red. So if it's complete, what color would it become? White. On that note, have a scar-free day. This podcast was recorded by Dr. Henry Sanchez at the University of California, San Francisco.